So quiet.
All right. Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And a little different this week. We're at my house instead of your house. Our friend Mark is doing some work for me, so there should be some construction noise in the background.
A little bit of ambiance to, you know, to lighten the mood. And
yeah, instead of Richard yelling at his dogs and cats every 10 minutes, there will be power drills and whatnot.
Exactly.
Okay, so not a lot of actual what we do is we talk about things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest.
Exactly.
New movies, old movies, DVDs, video games, things of that nature.
Pieces of lint in my pocket, you know, stuff that really gets
that
me.
That would entertain Richard. It entertains me slightly less so. and also technology as it applies. Oh, that reminds me, I had something else I wanted to write down there. So just kind of randomly starting, Studio 60 picked up for a full season.
Well, the funnier thing was, is I spent 3 days thinking it wasn't picked up and it had been canceled.
I sent you a blurb from Dark Horizon saying that it had been picked up and you thought it was that it had been canceled.
I completely misread it, got extremely depressed, kind of wandered around in a haze for 3 days. And then I sent you another link and, oh my God, it's been picked up. And you're looking at me like, dude, did you think I sent that original and said it had been canceled? And yeah, I in fact did. Oh my God.
That's okay. I completely understand how that can happen.
Well, the irony is apparently it was because of us that it was picked up, correct?
Yeah.
Well, no,
we were discussing it probably wouldn't be canceled because there's probably a lot of overhead invested in A, they paid a lot of money for the rights to make it. I don't know if it's Aaron Sorkin held on to his own rights or whatever production company, but NBC paid a lot of money to get it. And then judging by, as you and I discussed, the sets and the ensemble cast, they probably are paying a lot of money to make it. So they're probably a little less eager to
jettison immediately,
to throw that money away.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, maybe we should invest. So anyway, they're investing a season and I think that's fair. You know, if it can't pick up enough viewers in one season, it's probably, I can't speak ill of those who would cancel it.
Yeah, I know. It's a different landscape. In the old days, that'd be different.
Yeah,
but
you'd hope that, yeah. And, yeah. You know, there's lots of talk in the entertainment industry about how nobody gives the sitcoms or series a chance to pick up an audience anymore. They don't let them breathe for a couple of seasons.
Yeah, somehow 2.5 Men and The World According to Jim are running for six years.
You and I use that as the classic example of how in the hell.
Everyone's all flipping on and I'll go, oh my God, it's still on. I'm surprised that it's actually on. And then I'll hear some snippet that like 2.5 Men is like the number one comedy on TV. And I'm going, that's horrible. That's just horrible. There's so many talented people out there. And how could that possibly be true? I mean, it shows clearly that there's a lot of people out there that are very different from me.
Do you remember you probably don't, but there was an Onion story and basically the gist of it was, that a writer from Just Shoot Me would go down to the bar and try and pick up women, and he would abbreviate it JSM, and basically everyone was completely unimpressed with the fact he was a writer from Just Shoot Me, but in his head that was the greatest thing ever.
And that's perfect.
He was confused that he wasn't getting more friends and picking up more women with that.
That's perfect because Just Shoot Me is not quite as bad as it was. Actually kind of funny.
Yeah,
sometimes
I think I even saw a few
but,
of them.
But it's nowhere near like a Seinfeld or something else. So it'd be the kind of place where a writer would think just enough that this might impress people, as opposed to World According to Jim, where nobody would probably admit it. So it's a perfect, it would be the perfect, perfect show.
So the other, probably big news this week would be Borat related. Lots of different things going on with this.
Yeah.
It's
number one, 29 million.
Now that I have access to my own laptop.
Three or four times the number of theaters, it went up about 5%.
38 million total.
No, it's way above 38 million.
I'm on Box Office Mojo, and it says total gross 38 million.
Go to the weekend. go to the weekend charts.
It says weekly box office.
But that doesn't add in this weekend. Go to the weekend charts and you'll see it's up to about 60 million.
Nothing more excited to listeners listening to us surf the web.
No, it did about 30 million this weekend, and it was up about 3 million from last weekend. So it's up to about 57, 60 million.
Okay, this is weird to read because it looks like 113 million?
No.
Top 12 total. Okay, yeah. That was top 12 total. God, this is...
Borat, they dumped it in almost like four times the number of theaters or three times the number of theaters. It went up, so it's a legitimate hit, and it's up to about 60 million in 2 weeks.
I'll take your word for it. I can't parse these.
What you're looking at is... those are the estimate numbers. He doesn't add his totals till they finally come in like Tuesday morning or Monday night. But his estimated weekend haul was almost 30 million. Okay, Santa Claus is at about 12 million and others that I never even heard of. The Departed's like up to like 120 million now, which is awesome.
Not quite that high. It was like 105,
yeah.
I think.
Well, it made according 6 million Wells. Over the summer. I mean, over the weekend.
Anyway, so Borat is looks to be holding on to a substantial portion.
Yep.
As opposed to, big one weekend with a huge drop off. It's holding on. A lot.
Everyone, it actually gained.
Everyone I know has seen it.
Yep.
Saw it the first weekend. But it's to the two of the frat guys who were in the RV are suing.
Yep.
Saying they were told it was not going to be shown in the U.S.
These two, if people haven't seen it, the two basically Borat.
Supposedly hitches a ride.
Yeah. And a Winnebago kind of thing pulls up, and these frat guys are in there drinking, and then they commiserate with him about love and racism and other stuff.
And, they come off like drunk frat guy idiots, which to me, that's what frat guys look like and are. So that was not.
Even though they made some horrible statements, they sounded like ramblings of drunk idiots. It didn't sound bad. What was interesting about the lawsuit is. You got a little bit of insight of the process of how it worked. They said, oh, no, they met with us in a bar ahead of time and got us really drunk and then picked up this hitchhiker. I have no problem with that. That's how he does it. But it's just interesting to see how contrived is.
And they were saying that they were told it won't be shown in the U.S.
Yep.
When previously, because we were asking, how are people appearing in this movie without knowing it? Well, the release that they signed, there's like an escape clause in there saying that this may be used basically for any purpose at all.
Yep.
And that's the release clause that lets Joe Bob think he's in a documentary, but actually he's in a movie.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard that particular thing addressed, but they're saying they were told wasn't going to appear in the U.S. And then you sent me an article about how the residents of the Romanian village
of Glod,
which apparently is the Romanian word for mud or dirt, they are not happy because they were not portrayed well.
It's the funniest article ever.
See, I didn't think it was that funny.
It was just, I couldn't help but, I empathized with them. I totally get it. I just think that, but the point to this article, this was by this particular newspaper that's always had an anti-Ali G, Sacha Baron Cohen thing. They decide, well, let's go down to this Romanian village where they filmed it. Kind of like the people that decided to go find the dad of the kid that Madonna adopted.
And really?
Yeah. Basically, let's go in here and stir up trouble. And so they go in here to interview these people. And again, you're learning the inside of it. They used it as a backdrop for his Kazakhstan town. And they basically paid him. They paid him, but they basically paid him to come across as peasants to be mocked at. And among the things they talked about, he says, we thought this thing was going on. And next thing you know, this man is leaving animals in our homes and having our children hold machine guns.
Right. And and in the end, the residents got like 3 pounds a day, which is like $6.
Yeah. They got exactly. And they were, and what they were saying is we may sue because we should have got like 150 or whatever. And I don't disagree. I'm just saying, hey, they agreed to do whatever they want.
Yeah, it seems to me that, the film crew didn't do what they should have. I don't think that they're necessarily in the wrong, but what they should have done was explain what the purpose was, because my feeling is that the residents would have done it anyway. We want you to, we're portraying you as a Kazakh village. You're all supposed to act stupider than you are. We're making fun of this guy. We're not making fun of you, really. We're making fun of a set of a fictional set of a fictional situation, and we're going to pay you a reasonable fee. £3 a day is pretty...
See, I disagree when explaining them. I think that if I agree with that, I think that there just shouldn't be a Borat movie. If there if and I'm not going to be so condescending as to think of them as different than the frat guys. I just think it's the way they structure it. Now, the money thing, I agree to some extent. I mean, what they're saying is they're paying them a certain amount today, more than they would have gotten elsewhere. They had a fun time, but clearly the movie could afford to pay him without breaking a sweat a lot more. So sure, whatever, they could have or should have paid him more, especially if they're getting this movie kind of, I'm not sure how it works, but you would think that they should get something for the fact that they appear in a movie beyond their daily fee. You know, but reading the article, it just got fun. And then they go, but I was just laughing. And then they got to the point, and then this poor man who lost his arm had the indignity. There's a famous scene of this movie involving this rubber fist. And at the very end, he's holding this sex toy on his arm as a replacement. I just, honest to God, reading this article, I almost thought it was a joke. I almost thought it was because it touched on every touch point of why they could have been abused villagers or whatever. It almost seemed like a joke to me. And I know it's a legitimate story and I know it's serious, but I don't know. It's hard for me to have that much sympathy other than the money, but the money, it's all a contextual thing. I mean, to some extent, you could have said they could have paid him a lot more. I mean, I can't speak to that. I don't know if they went to 10 Romanian towns and then finally used the footage from this town, you know?
Well, I think, you know, now, you know, especially if the town's upset, now's an opportunity for whoever the movie company is to go in, spend what to them is a pittance and invest the money in the town just to show that they're good people, regardless of whether or not they should have done it before. Now I think it's the right thing to do.
Well, from one perspective, I was listening to this guy in Howard Stern, Artie Lang. He's talking about being in movies, and he was in Elf, and he was in there for one day, and he's like not a lead at all. He's just like the sixth lead or whatever. But Elf goes on TNT, and they run the damn thing around the clock. And he says, oh my God, it's like a little money tree. I get to go out and shake. I mean, it's not big money, but every month he gets these big residual checks from this movie he was in for one day. And he says, now he was, you know, Artie Lang was the third lead in The Bachelor with, Robin, whatever his name was, from Batman Robin. And he says, now that doesn't get on TV as much. When it does, I get a bigger percentage, because that's the way narrative fiction films work. If you're in there, you get a percentage. Nonfiction films, you basically sign your lease. You don't get any rights or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, I think you can make a legitimate case that Borat, though it's using the context of nonfiction film, there is no way it's a nonfiction film. It's basically unwitting participants in a traditional film. And I think you can make the argument that they deserve some form of a residual similar to the others, because it's effectively that kind of movie. And I would totally think that that would be a fair and appropriate. And I would think, given the enormous success of this movie, they should consider going in there and
because
filming
it
them.
Would, because it, you know, it
but people are talking about
much.
Them. People are talking about them making fun of the village. Nobody would even know where this village was. People
God,
think
no
it's in
kidding.
Kazakhstan. So I don't
and
have
nobody
a,
thinks any less of the people in
yeah,
it.
Exactly,
because we all understand it's a movie.
But I agree. Given that the fact that the movie, probably looking at now worldwide, including DVD sales, is probably going to make like $250 million. The three pounds a day that they paid these people is kind of embarrassing.
That was a great article on Salon.com about tracking what was real and what wasn't in the movie in terms of following up with some of the people in it and were they actors or were they authentic?
Yep.
Did you read it?
No. Was this the one from like 3 weeks ago or something?
No,
or?
This was within the last week.
No, I missed that. No.
And I'm sure there are multiple articles trying to do the same thing, but like the prostitute was an actress, full on actress, knew what was going on completely. And so on and so forth.
Yeah, and that's, since he ended up in wherever, you got to
assume and the antique mall where he broke all the stuff, they paid for everything he broke.
Yeah,
you know, and the guy at the dinner party who said he was retired, and he interpreted that to mean retarded.
That was so funny.
He said,
retarded?
Apparently, he said his kids, his college-age kids thought the movie was hysterical.
I can imagine being his kid laughing.
And the people were saying, and the people at the dinner party saying, well, the way it was shot, it makes us look like we all left at once, but really that's not what happened.
And the police were arriving.
We weren't that upset. It wasn't that big a deal. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's fine, because there's an element of this awkward humor where he's catching them in these situations, and then you have to realize it's a movie.
Oh, I got to see that article somewhere. I missed it.
Okay, so let's move on from Borat.
Borat is funny.
Do you see a thing on Hollywood Elsewhere that the Jesse James movie is in potential trouble?
Yeah.
And this is the, God, what, it's
called,
wonderful
it's
title.
It's called The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Yeah.
That's a great title.
It's a wonderful
Brad
title.
Brad Pitt is Jesse James. And
what's his
Casey
name? Casey
Affleck.
And by all accounts, I've read, people have seen snippets, they say Casey Affleck is like perfect in this role. He's finally going to break out from being this minor, you know, brother Ben Affleck thing.
And a couple of things are happening with this. One, it's been pushed back.
Yep.
And so people are saying it's like a Terrence Malick movie where it's gorgeous.
Like an art house Western thing.
It's gorgeous, but it's too long, and it's probably not going to have a lot of, it won't have wide ranging appeal.
Well, what's scary is they're lumping it. They're basically putting it, and the picture they put next to it is All the King's Men.
Because it was pushed back a year.
And didn't work and screwed up and got horrible reviews.
Although, I mean, yes, there's that, but you have to look at the Jesse James movie. I'm sorry, but people are going to go see it because Brad Pitt's in it.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt's in Babel,
and it's not doing that well. It's not doing poorly. It's just an art house kind of release.
Yeah, but I think from the advertising, I mean, Brad Pitt is front and center, but like I know that there are four intertwining stories of Brad Pitt's just part of one. And I think
the thing is, Brad Pitt is right now, you could probably make a legitimate case he's the biggest star in the world. And the reason you make that is because he does well here, but internationally, movies that don't do well here do so big a business internationally that it's stunning. Like even Troy was considered kind of a flop here. It made like 160 million. It made like 400 million out of the United States. And the thing about this one is it's an art house Western, and I don't know how much legs those have outside of the U.S., even though it's Brad Pitt.
Yeah, well, that's an excellent
But point. I don't know, I looked at, I remember seeing the first preview for this like 6 months ago thinking, oh my God, because of that title, because of the way it was coming across, it just thinking this looks
honestly
good.
And for me, it's so weird. That title really gets me excited about the movie.
Exactly.
It's like you look at that and you're like, wow, anyone that does that title is clearly aiming at me.
Absolutely.
And aiming at you.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So,
and I would wager aiming at Mark.
I hope that the thing that Wells was saying was, to some extent, or whoever's writing the art of the piece, they're basically implying that, hey, let's not, you know, there's stuff they want to fix and there's some stuff, but let's not make it much worse. Let's accept it for what it is. There, you know, and it's hard to know. I just hope that, I hope it's a good movie. I hope that sometimes you'll hear bad reports. Like last week, you know, honest to God, I was totally turned off from Stranger Than Fiction because of that one Wells piece or whatever. Totally turned off. And now that I've been reading these reviews, that I've been going, wow, this looks like a movie I would really like. I mean, Ebert from his hospital bed gave it 3.5 stars and said it was a wonderful movie. A lot of people got really good reviews. And I'm looking at this going, I would have liked that. I can't believe how I just let that stupid thing. But although that one thing that influenced me about a critical issue with the movie would probably sit there and stick in my craw the whole movie.
I had a chance to see it Thursday night at a preview. Although if I'd have seen that, there was another preview that night for A Good Year with Russell Crowe that
it's got bad reviews.
Regardless, I still would rather have seen that.
Yeah.
Than the other one.
I would too, just to see Provence.
We both ended up having weeks that prevented us from doing that, so we can't report in on those previews. So next,
but it didn't do very well. I mean, the Russell Crowe, he clearly doesn't have much star power when it comes to a movie like this. I know he likes to make movies like this, but it did poorly. I think it did like it came in like.
Well,
eighth.
I've seen almost no advertising for it.
I think as they realize it just wasn't doing they're just kind of releasing
it because they could just not be advertising on the shows I watch. Cause even though I'm flipping through commercials, you know, you see a millisecond of the commercial, you can usually tell what it is.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm being sold tires. I'm being sold beer.
Yeah.
You know, there's this movie, there's a promo for a football game.
Well, Russell Crowe went out and promoted the heck out of the thing. And I think part of it, it's cause he's, he's in the States right now filming another Ridley Scott movie, that American Gangster, which has big hit written all over it. But you know, I don't know. It just didn't do well, and it's sort of, apparently it's not exciting very many people. I think it sounds sort of like the studio just said, oh, it's another matchstick, man.
We're going to have to pause for a second.
Okay. Okay, we apparently are back.
Sorry about that. Construction needs.
I have no idea what we're talking about. Let's talk about Ed Bradley.
You want to do that now?
Yeah.
Ed Bradley has died.
Yeah, Ed Bradley, famed correspondent for CBS News.
And 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes. And I've only ever known him on 60 Minutes. That is a shame because I liked Ed Bradley. Yeah. I like 60 Minutes. I like everyone there but Katie Couric because of that fluffy-ass interview she did with Condi Rice.
Ugh.
So she can redeem herself, but based on that.
I thought it was interesting to watch. I didn't watch ABC's, but I watched NBC's. They made the final thing on NBC's Nightly News with Brian Williams a thing about Ed Bradley. They literally spent 5 minutes on it, which is an enormous amount of time. Extremely gracious, extremely well done. I was extremely impressed. And it shows, you know, a lot of newsmen, they respect each other and they will do that, but it was still extremely classy and it was a good report. And you realized, you know, what both a pioneer, but I mean, that was like 30 years ago. And he's a pioneer. He's just a really good journalist. He seemed to care about his stories and taking the best care. One thing I wasn't aware of him, they showed scenes of him, I think it was in Vietnam, getting wounded in the arm. I had no idea he had been shot basically in Vietnam, covering Vietnam. So yeah, incredible guy.
Died of leukemia. I had no idea he had it.
You know, he looked so oddly thin the last couple of years, and apparently he's been struggling with it, and that must have been part of it.
And aside, you know, you didn't see any diminishment in terms of his energy on camera.
No,
I had no idea. Yeah. So that is a shame because he was great.
Yeah, he you know, I'm like that huge Howard Stern fan, and a year ago he did an interview with Howard Stern, and it was one of the better ones I'd ever seen because he did not go for the obvious stuff. He really got stuff out of the guy that you didn't know anything else. I mean, he touched on this stuff, but good interviewer. The only one I remember that I hated was when there was some lady that was accusing President Clinton of like fondling her or something. It was like in the tail end of the Clinton presidency. David Letterman made fun of this whole time because at one point he leans over, Ed Bradley leans over to the woman and goes, was he aroused? Describing this.
I remember that. And I remember Letterman making.
He could not stop making fun of it. It was so awful. But Letterman's point was, this is so stupid. You're even talking about this. But to put it in, but you know, to give Ed Bradley credit, they had to cover it. I mean, that was the sign of the times. But anyway, great journalist, and it caused me to reflect on how much and how long I've been enjoying 60 Minutes. I remember the first time when I ever watched it. I was probably like 12 years old. It was like around 1980. I was living in Canada. My mom would watch it, and that's when I first became more aware of these kinds of things. And I've been watching it for the last 25 years. So
yeah, and did you see their graphical refresh this season?
A little bit, although I tend to tune in on it like, oh my god, 6 minutes, and I tune on it at 5 minutes in. So
they refreshed the logos and the stopwatch. It's nice.
Hmm.
So something else on our list was Dane Cook.
Oh yeah, Dane Cook.
I can't remember how we brought it up, but
it was you had sent me a little smiley that implied somebody's middle finger.
That wasn't a smiley. That was dot dot.
I know.
Bar.
Yep.
And dot.
Yes.
So it was the finger to you. For I wasn't sure. Snotty, you had said.
And then I sent back to say, well, you should do it this way because it's like Dane Cook's super finger. Because Dane Cook, he's got a bit where he talks about how the finger is so overused. Something that I've never actually seen the bit. I've only seen it referenced. But so he pulls down one finger, the other finger, and has his two middle fingers sitting up as a super finger. And if you go to his website, you'll see the super finger and stuff. And it's like the thing. But the reason I pointed out was, or the discussion we were having was that Dane Cook could not get worse press when it comes to other comedians and critics. They loathe him to such a degree that it's incredible how much they hate the guy.
And in the, I think it might have been Salon last week or the week before, there was an article about it was an opinion article. It wasn't an article. It was a piece about how this guy just isn't funny. How is this guy getting all this press and he's just not funny? He's got no jokes. It's like he doesn't even have jokes. He's just got these weird rambling routines that are like 20 something and la 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 la. And yeah, referencing, you know, all the stories reference, he's great on MySpace and, you know.
Well, he built up the point, like he pointedly about 4 years ago decided to invest $25,000 into this web page, and all his other comedian buddies made fun of him for it, but he invested in it to be able to update it regularly, have a blog before there was really blogs, have video, and build up this network. And apparently it's all paying off, because his whole point, his crowd, is all these young people that are into The Cook and into Dane Cook and all this other stuff. And that's what they're implying. But comedians hate the guy. You know, all, on Howard Stern, they have comedians on all the time and they cannot lay off of it. And I think part of it is legitimate jealousy. That's about 5% of it. And I think 95% of it is they just, it kills them that a guy that they perceive as not funny has such enormous audience, such enormous success.
I would totally get that. I mean, I would share the same feeling.
I'll sit there and watch. I've seen a couple of his routines like on HBO, and I'll watch it and I'll be smiling and kind of want to laugh, and I'll see the audience just laughing and I'll see him really going for it. And then finally I just turn off realizing I didn't really laugh. I'm smiling because I'm with the crowd and I'm with it, but I don't get it. And I see where comedians are coming from, because there's some comedians where you go, I can see why people are finding it funny. That's not my style. But this here, you can't see why people find it funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think part of it also is he's really good looking, and people and other comics resent that. It was sort of like Jimmy Fallon. A lot of comics hated him on Saturday Night Live because, oh, all the girls liked him. And Dane Cook is definitely an all the girls like him kind of comic. And so I don't know, but it's so funny to hear how resentful these other comics are.
It really is. So next I have a list of trailers that I've seen in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 3 is the big one. The big dog.
Oh, a new one? Is there a new one?
I guess I won't ask you what you thought of it.
You need to send me those links, dude.
I just assume that on something like that, it would come across your radar in the normal course of business, so to speak.
My surfing habits end up being really eclectic, so I end up missing that. So, you know, I think I did hear about it, but for some reason, I just didn't realize there was a new one. I don't know.
It's an okay trailer.
Do they show more of the old Sandman?
They do, and Sandman gets
most of it. I liked that for the first preview, and I thought, this is going to be cool.
But most of the most of the trailer is about Sandman.
Yeah.
Very little, if any, Topher Grace.
Really? What? Who's he playing again?
Venom.
Oh, so he is playing. Okay. Okay. Cool. Okay.
And it'll be hard to see how they actually explain the black symbiote suit, because in the comics it's like an alien life form that Spider-Man got during Secret Wars, which I never read. But anyway, it's the continuation of the themes where how do you be a superhero and try and be married to this hot chick at the same time? And, you know, it seemed okay, and I'm going to see it, but I'm not, I feel like I'm not as excited about it as I'm supposed to be.
Hmm. Yeah.
And maybe that could just be residual letdown from number two, because I'm the only person in the universe that was not enamored with number two. And I won't go over again the reasons why, although I'm happy to.
It's good to be an iconoclast.
It wasn't bad, but there were some bad parts in it that ruined it for me.
Well, it was one of those movies that got these universally ecstatic reviews, and you almost think in retrospect it was more a sign of the times kind of thing. You got to help old Marcus there.
There's a second one in the that one works.
So it was one of those movies that got that got. I almost think it's like a sign of times. Like you notice how some movies critics will glom on as some epitome of a certain art form, whether they realize it or not, they just sort of think they need to do it. And I think Spider-Man 2, I was stunned by I liked Spider-Man 2, but I was stunned by some of the reviews where, like, Ebert and others were putting it on a pedestal that as a great movie, as one of the great movies, meaning amongst all movies. And I was like, I didn't get what made this any uniquely different than any other one. It's just well made. So I tend to agree with you on that. I think I liked it much more than you did, but I tend to be confused by why it was so rapturously received.
Yeah. Anyway, so we don't need to dwell on that one too
much.
What other
trailer?
Well, let's see. I got Catch and Release, which I had known almost nothing about. But basically, it's a romantic comedy with Jennifer Garner.
Oh.
Whose fiancé dies. And so it's like her in the aftermath, and it's like her fiancé's buddy who's, messy and slob, and she doesn't like him. And, of course, it's about how they get together. But Kevin Smith is one of her friends.
Oh, as an actor.
Kevin Smith is an actor, and the stuff they're showing in the preview is funny. Hmm. And it's, I mean, I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan, so anything he does, I'm probably going to think is funny.
Keeping it all in the family.
But he is, the type of humor he's using here is very broad, and anybody who, it would appeal to non-Clerks fans is where I'm going with this. What I'm trying to express is he's branching out aside from his Silent Bob stereotype.
You know what's funny is there's people, my brother specifically included, but I've met like four or five people that really don't know much about Kevin Smith movies. I mean, they know of him, but they haven't really sought him out, haven't seen him, but love An Evening with Kevin Smith.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. My brother owns a copy of that movie and loves this thing. And I'm, because of his personality, and I've always thought if he could do more, like he sort of steps back, I'm the director, but if he could have that persona or something like that, basically him, more in movies and not.
It's funny you mention that. An Evening with Kevin Smith 2, Evening Harder, is end of this month.
See, that's perfect because he's just legitimately entertaining and fun and I think a lot of people think, oh, that's like for the hardcore Kevin Smith people, but I'm telling you, people that aren't hardcore people really find it amusing and funny. My brother and sister-in-law specifically. So
yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know yet. That's great.
Brother owns like 20 DVDs, and that's one of them. So
he's got this great. He was on Dinner for Five, that Jon Favreau IFC thing, and he was on with. That was a nice catch. Sorry, I'm making the mistake of watching football.
And nobody's blocking it. Nobody's covering him. Straight.
It was quite the spastic touchdown dance.
It was like the icky shake. Oh my god!
So anyway, Mark Hamill was one of the other guests who played Luke Skywalker.
Absolutely.
And so Mark Hamill, in the course of this dinner, turns to Kevin Smith and says, "Oh, did you hear that Lucas was doing Star Wars for TV? And I heard you were doing it. What's up with that?" And Kevin Smith's like, "Yeah, what is up with that?" And basically, because the rumors, Lucas had announced that he was moving into TV and doing Star Wars projects.
Was it like the Drone Wars or something, or wasn't there something?
No, it could be set during the Clone Wars. Oh, okay.
The Drone Wars.
And so people would go up to Kevin Smith and say, "Well, have you been approached? Are you involved in this project at all?" And he'd say, "Maybe, I don't know," and like very very clearly hinting that he was, but he wasn't allowed to say it.
Yeah.
And so Hamill so says, "What's up with this? Are you doing that?" And Kevin Smith's like, he's like, no one's approached me. But every time someone would ask, I'd have this kind of fetching, maybe, and in the hopes that I would get asked. But to that point, it hadn't worked, and Lucasfilm hadn't approached him because he wasn't actively stoking the rumor mill to get himself the job, but he wasn't denying it with any sort of credibility. And I thought that was hysterical. Like, oh, maybe
that is, I got to remember. I keep forgetting what channel that's on. I don't have a PVR or DVR. So I love that show. I just keep forgetting to surf by it.
So anyway, Kevin Smith looks like a great supporting, playing the friend role in this Catch and Release film. I saw a trailer for Aragorn. It's the book. I think the author of Aragorn was like 15.
Yeah, the 15-year-old kid, and the book's like 8,000 pages.
We need to time out for a second.
Okay, we're back, and you were talking about the Aragorn.
Yeah, so I don't know for sure if it was the one this kid wrote, but
I think it is. I can't enjoy a movie like that. I can't enjoy a movie written by some preternaturally smart kid.
I'm positive he didn't write the screenplay. Based on whatever this story.
And that still angers me.
I see what you're saying.
Angers me out of sheer jealousy.
I see what you're saying. Based on this trailer, it looks somewhat interesting, but it doesn't look original at all. It's your It's the generic fantasy storyline.
With the exception of Evil, Lord of the Rings, I am not into fantasy.
Evil ruler John Malkovich rules the land. Mm. You know, there's a legend about a dragon rider who can come up and, I don't know, free the slaves or whatever the hell.
This is not Dungeons & Dragons 2, is it?
It practically looks like it. Mm. Not that I saw it.
I saw that on cable. This, it was really bad.
They get this dragon egg out, I guess, and a dragon, and then the guy, he's a dragon rider, and they're fighting the evil, you know, he's taught by the mentor of Jeremy Irons, and you're just looking at it going, you're like, okay, well, I think I've seen this movie
Jeremy
four
Irons
or five
is
times.
In it. So it is Dungeons & Dragons 2. He was the guy in Dungeons & Dragons, him and Thora Birch. It was a really, really bad movie.
But I'm looking at John Malkovich, and there was some line in the trailer about they will fear their ruler. And I was thinking, well, not if they knew you could rent time in his head for 20 minutes at a pop.
Oh, man.
All right. The Holiday, which is just total chick flick with Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz, Jude Law, and Jack Black.
Yeah, he's trying to branch out, isn't he?
And to his credit, and to the filmmaker's credit, he's clearly toned down in this role. Yep. He's not as normal 11, if you will.
Well, you know what's funny is they had some review of Tenacious D, and they were saying, it's fun, but they were saying, the problem is so many people have been telling Jack Black to tone down, but they think he toned down too much for Tenacious D when that's the one role that demanded Jack Black to be Jack Black. So it'd be interesting.
I can't imagine he toned down.
I can't imagine either, but they were claiming he did. They were claiming so much this movie he's, you know, not the Jack Black you're coming to expect.
We'll see.
Have you seen any of the commercials for that, by the way?
Yes.
Have you seen the kids in this movie?
Yes.
It's almost like they must have done computer morphing because it's so... I mean, did they? Is it like a?
I don't know.
It looks so much like a baby, like a 12-year-old Jack Black and a 12-year-old Kyle Gass in such a bizarre way that I got to imagine it. They couldn't have found a kid that looks that much like him. I'm imagining it's almost like what they did in Little Man, that horrible Wayans Brothers movie
God.
Or something.
Well, the DVD for that's coming out, so there's a new round of commercials, ugh, which are so horrible to watch.
It just creeps you out every time you see the thing. It just looks awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's next on your list there, G?
Let's Go to Prison.
Huh.
Which, do you know anything about this movie?
No, I just seen the ads. I mean, it looks high concept. It looks kind of funny, I guess.
It's got Will Arnett, who was Job from Arrested Development.
A genius.
Absolutely hysterical actor, yep. Certainly in Arrested Development,
yep.
Which is really all I've ever seen him in.
I know, but he's incredible.
And the other thing is, and like he's wrongly imprisoned, or he's in prison, but he's playing the new fish.
Yep.
But it was directed by Bob Odenkirk.
Was it? So it's...
And so you're wanting, you and I,
yep.
Clearly wanting to love this thing, but I look at the trailer, I look at they're now running commercials for it.
Looks pretty broad.
Not that funny. The trailer does not make me laugh.
From one standpoint, they're heavily playing on the there's going to be unconsensual gay prison sex things.
Yeah,
with
that,
talking
that's
about
the
soap.
Entire thrust of all these commercials.
Exactly. And I, you know, for one thing, I
like how you said unconsensual.
Yeah. For one thing, I don't find, probably because I ended up writing a paper about it in college, I just don't find it hugely funny. It's like one of my little sore things. It's sort of like a Borat, it's like I'm laughing along and then there's like this bear in there. And I don't, because of me, I'm an idiot. I don't like animal acts in things. And I definitely don't like this. So I was going, oh, that's the whole point of this movie is like that. I'm willing to like understand why it's funny, but I don't like it. But for no other reason, it's like, that's as base, as low as you can get. And I hope it gets beyond that. Bob Odenkirk's involved. Maybe it'll be good. Did you ever see that Dinner
I've got
Melt?
The DVD.
What a great movie.
I thought it was okay.
I loved it. I thought it was well done. I thought the way it danced around, it was beautiful.
He clearly said that he came in to direct that as a favor, that it was essentially a stage play.
Yep.
And he wasn't really bringing a lot of, you know, direction to the table, but he was just helping to sort of adapt them to be appropriate for filming.
But
and he did a fine job.
I'll tell you, in that DVD, they show scenes...
Yes.
From the play. And I'm looking at this play and it looked broad and it looked awful to watch. I mean, it just, I if I had seen it play, I would have thought, why would they even consider? And the movie was a legitimate real movie, and I thought it was great. I so whatever best, he brought to it, I thought was great.
The best thing about the DVD for that movie, which was Melvin Goes to Dinner, yep. So people know what we're talking about, was the fake film festival.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Looks
absolutely.
Like it's time for another pause.
Oh great, okay.
Okay,
okay, we're back.
And we were, I was talking about Let's Go, or...
Melvin Goes to Dinner.
Melvin Goes to Dinner. And the best thing about that DVD was the fake film festival with Fred Armisen as the host.
Yeah.
And it was basically at Fred Armisen's house, yeah. And there was this mom.
Fred Armisen was Saturday Night Live.
Yes. And yeah. it was tremendously funny. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all the trailers...
God, I didn't see a damn one of them.
Okay.
You gotta send me them links. I gotta see them.
Well, I'll tell you why I saw them in a moment. But first, did you see this week's South Park?
It was the second of two parts. Yeah, it was the atheist and the Cartman goes to the future to get a
week. A couple of things about this one. The first is you really can't be eating dinner when you watch South Park anymore.
Yeah.
Now,
The Richard Dawkins part where he's having...
Well, the first time that happened was the Mr. Garrison sex change into Mrs. Garrison when they showed actual surgery footage, possibly sex change surgery footage,
yep.
Right when my wife and I were eating spaghetti.
Yep.
And we're like, ooh, we clearly can't be watching this for a while. And on this one, Mrs. Garrison having sex with
really,
some other guy...
Which, the world's most famous atheist and scientist, Richard Dawkins.
And later on, you see Mrs. Garrison's breasts, the most disgusting, yeah. Nauseating on yeah. purpose. So there was that. And then there was this whole Cartman can't wait for the Nintendo Wii to come out. So he gets Butters to freeze him.
Yeah.
It goes awry. And suddenly it's Buck Rogers.
Yeah.
And they're doing the whole, they completely redid the opening and the music's there and it's da 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 da. And I am just geeking out because I used to love Buck Rogers.
Yep.
Those reruns. And so hearing that theme music, it was just pushing all these memory buttons. It was great.
Gil Gerard.
Aaron Gray.
Well, you know, the thing I liked it. I would give the two episodes arc a thumbs up, but I didn't totally like it for this reason. They've clearly been dancing around. They even alluded to it in some of these interviews that they want to do an atheist show because they get so much flack for going after Christians, going after different groups, and they're going, but they have just as much, they find everybody hypocritical.
I don't see how this episode danced around it. They just went after.
I didn't say they weren't dancing around. I'm saying they've in the past and they've been wanting to. And so people are assuming whatever. And they're basically, people are assuming that, oh, they must be atheists. And they're going, no. We don't like anything. We don't like anybody. And this was, and they kept going, we're going to do an atheist show. So they want to do it. So in this case, they clearly decided we're going to show atheists. So they have like the leading atheist having sex, painful, like deep sex with Mrs. Garrison.
That was horrible.
And so in other words, that's one way of sticking it. And they were trying to show the end result of this atheism is, oh, in the future, they're still having wars. It's just atheist wars. And I thought, I don't know, that's just kind of a weak thing about trying to put down atheists. Because atheists don't necessarily, to me, say, the whole point to atheism isn't, oh, it's wars are caused by religion. I that's not my thing necessarily against atheism. But I don't know. Anyway, so I just thought that was kind of a weak. If there's ways to attack atheists, and this one sort of was a half-assed way, ultimately, if that was their intent. Please work. Okay, it's working. So anyway.
We're going to have so many edits in this. So many,
I know,
stop,
it's
going to
sound very funny.
Sorry.
So anyway, I liked it, but it was, if it was their intent, like they've done shows that have so succinctly cut to the heart of something. Their Family Guy episode, their Tom Cruise episode, this one, the Scientology episode, this one here to me danced around it, but did not really attack what could have been ways, better ways to get to the heart of atheism. I mean, they could have focused on how sanctimonious atheists are there's a bunch of ways they could have done it, but the whole idea that atheists don't realize that without, you know, religion, there might still be war seems to be, I don't know.
I agree, but and to me,
and I geeked out the same way you did with Buck Rogers. I love that show. Love that show when I was a kid.
Well, it was hysterical. They had the dog robot walking around, rough, rough,
oh,
and then
my
it
God.
Turns into meow, meow.
I know,
meow,
the cat run. I love that too. I loved that.
And although then when you have the talking otters, my wife's just like, what?
The talking, oh yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, well, honey, clearly that's when they were smoking weed.
Yeah.
And actually I read a flying back from Washington, D.C. a month ago, whenever it was, the guy sitting next to me had an FHM magazine,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, it's one of those Maxim, any excuse to sew almost naked women magazines.
It's the penthouse to Maxim's Playboy.
Okay. And this guy, you know, he's on his way to a business conference sponsored by Microsoft because he had his stuff right in front of him and I was just, oh, what you doing there? But it was weird to see what would otherwise be a respectable businessman unabashedly reading FHM. But there's an article in there I could tell about how the South Park is, what the process is for creating one. It was like an article, some of the history and the initial testing and how the first actual episode was all cardboard or construction paper and took, you know, months for everyone to put together. But there was a section in there about the actual process of creating one and the fact that they do it over the course of a week.
Yep.
Which, you know, and I knew that. And
yeah,
I knew it was,
we talked about them before. It's like that's how they can be so relevant now because they actually deliver it over the course of a week.
Well, and they said it's so crushing that they only do 7 in a row now because it's just so exhausting.
That was the weird thing, by the way. This is their 10th season. And about a few weeks ago, they got all this press. This is their 10th season. This is their 10th season, the B part of their 10th season. They already started their 10th season 5 months ago, and somehow the press has not noted that. And in fact, the only way even people notice is people on iTunes that subscribe for 10 season A, and then now that 10 season B is on, you see all these little, you know, these little snarky comments. I subscribe for 10 season, now I got to buy it again or whatever. It's like, no, you paid for 7 episodes. But it's amazing how people haven't caught on to the fact that their season... They managed to get an enormous amount of press twice for the 10th season, and none of the press seemed to notice that. It's the weirdest thing. Anyway, I'm sorry, I digress.
No problem.
By the way, this is an incredible game going on here. I know we're not trying not to watch it, but Cincinnati was up like 28-0 or 28-7, and now they're losing 42-28. 38. Or 38. I mean, an incredible game. I mean, not, maybe not a good game or game that matters, but it's like, and there's still like the entire fourth quarter to go. What an awesome scoring fest, though. Anyway, go ahead.
But they were talking about, apparently it's just, I think Matt Stone writes it all.
Yep. No. Trey Parker writes it all.
Well, one of the guys writes it all, and Trey then Parker. The other helps with.
Yep. Trey Parker is the show. If you look in the credits, Trey Parker is the director. He writes the stuff. He's the producer, and Matt Stone's credits are like a third of what Trey Parker. They're clearly partners.
Is Trey's the tall guy with the
Trey's
fro?
The blonde.
No. Okay. So yeah. Matt's the tall guy with the fro.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so they're clearly partners, but if you look at the credits or anything, it's clearly Trey Parker's show. So, you know, for the most part,
I didn't realize that they've done a good job then for making that partnership work.
That's what surprised me. You never hear anybody ask about that going, you know, Trey, since season one, you've been credited as director on every show and you've been credited as writer on every show completely. And because when they do interviews, they do it. You never see when they talk about they speak at the same time. You never see Trey go, oh, no, actually, that was my deal. They just talk like it's a partnership totally. So somehow they've come to an agreement that publicly seems to work extremely well. In how they come across and how it works.
Yeah. Just randomly before I get to the large topic for the Cars DVD released this week.
Yeah.
Nothing on it.
What do you mean?
There's hardly any special features. It's not a double, which sucks because Pixar had gotten in the habit of just, here's our double disc super duper.
Are they going to come out something later like
they
most
have to? There's nothing on this one.
Wow.
It was like, I say nothing. There's like one or two small things.
You know, they probably just got tired of putting that all out and going, you know, we can get that dual market everybody else does where we buy it and then later we get the others.
That would suck.
It would suck.
I didn't buy it.
It wouldn't suck.
Because of that. I'm waiting for the damn special edition.
An enormous number of people did buy it. It sold like 5 million copies in its first week. It's like unbelievably successful. And don't forget their last DVD, Incredibles, famously, I'm going to say that word, but they shipped a ton of units and ended up shipping tons back. The Incredibles was the one that everybody thought that...
Henry's.
Pardon me. The Incredibles was the DVD that everybody thought, well, Pixar finally didn't do that well and finally screwed up and it didn't do that well. And they're back on top with Cars because it's enormously successful, which sucks because my favorite Pixar movie is The Incredibles. And it just sucks that it's sort of relegating everybody's mind as the one that did. They're all A efforts and that one did the B level effort and success.
Incredibles?
Yeah, because it didn't do as well as the others.
You must be plugged into a different zeitgeist.
No, I'm talking about in terms of the success level. Each one kept doing better, and it peaked with Finding Nemo, which was enormously successful. It could not be more successful. And The Incredibles did 70% of the business of Finding Nemo, and everybody kept getting used to them just topping each other in terms of success. And all of a sudden, The Incredibles, which they sort of thought as a different project, it was their first PG-13 one, little bit, you know, different, and then it didn't do as well, and people were questioning them. The irony is, didn't do as well. Oh, it made $400 million worldwide instead of $600 million. But no, The Incredibles clearly, in terms of financial gain, and including DVD sales, was at a second tier.
Well, I knew
the
DVD sales were down, but
and
anyway,
so was just, the other one. Anyway, go ahead.
It just pisses me off that I don't want a Cars with nothing on it.
I
want the DVD with... And usually Pixar they're pretty good about not, you know, releasing and releasing and releasing. Yeah. They did it with Toy Story because they have the ultimate
the
toy
three
box.
Thing. Yeah, I got that one too.
But that's it. You know, you only have one Finding Nemo out there. You only have one Incredibles out there. And they're excellent, a lot of effort, excellent DVDs with lots of stuff on them. I don't want the nothing on it Cars. I want the super duper Cars. And it's irritating that I don't have it or that I have to wait.
I agree. Although I'm getting excited about King Kong coming out. Well, I'm getting excited to get the HD DVD version. I'm going to pay basically $200 to watch King Kong when it comes out. But look, reading what Harry Knowles was saying about the extended disc version, he did a big review of it, which is coming out in like a month or so.
Did he?
I really like King Kong. You know, a lot of people didn't. I really liked it. And I'm going to like everything he adds even more. And I'm going to love all the behind the scenes stuff. I'm just going to eat that thing up. And I hope that damn thing is like 20 hours long, because I'm going to eat up every minute of that thing. I loved it. I loved the Lord of the Rings DVDs. It's kind of funny, but I have fond memories of getting those Lord of the Rings DVDs every year and committing like a weekend to just plowing through everything over and over again.
Well,
you didn't like them?
No, when the first one came out, which had to me had the best special features.
Yep.
It had the funniest cast commentary.
Yep.
The documentary to me was the best. The talking with Alan Parker.
No, you're talking about the artist.
Yeah, I'm blanking on both Parker, of their names. Yeah. There was two of them.
But I know you're talking about the one with the bad teeth, and then the one with the
That DV showed up the weekend that my grandmother died. And so I grabbed those. I took my laptop with me along with the bonus discs. And so over the course of that weekend and sort of when there's downtime, watching it within the context of that. So it was just kind of a weird memory because it's associated with that.
Well, I agree. The first one is totally the best. And after that, you know, it's sort of diminishing returns. I still enjoy it. And the first one, I literally listened to all four commentaries, and that was a commitment.
I did that too.
It was 12 hours of commentary. But, and the second ones, I would listen to snippets of them and some other stuff because it's more of the same. But I definitely listened to the better part of at least two sets of commentaries. But I just loved them. It was just a complete commitment to the art form of DVD packaging. And I love that. And I'm assuming King Kong will be the same, and I'm very much looking forward to it. I really enjoyed that movie, and I'm just looking forward to more, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so last Friday, went out and got this thing at, I think, didn't last week we already go over the picking it up story?
Yes,
I think so.
A little bit.
So yesterday, the guy from Dish Network came to hook up the HD feed to actually get HD programming on the HD TV. First of all, the guy's here 5.5 hours.
Wow.
The poor guy had a problem with the dish is looking at different satellites.
You have to have multiple dishes. They don't have like a tri-dish.
No, because, and this gets a little into the weeds, but I'm going to say it anyway. My existing dish box, because I got it in 2002, has a super warranty attached to it. Like lifetime, no questions asked, super warranty.
Yep.
They don't offer this warranty anymore. However, if I keep that box, and as long as it's active in the household, that super warranty covers the new HD box.
Uh-huh.
So I now have a superior warranty on the HD box, but I need to keep the old box in the house and active.
Oh, okay.
So I knew that was going to have to happen. Where I spaced was, I now have two satellite dishes on my roof. I look like a goober in the neighborhood.
So the new dish can't feed the old box.
The different satellites.
Well, but I know like my dad has that, but the new, he's got, it's like a parabola dish and it picks up actually three satellites.
Well, the installer said the dish is launching two more satellites within a year.
Yeah.
And that there within that might be the ability to just have one dish for these multiple boxes, but it has to do with, I don't really know. And yeah. So I've got two dishes on my roof, so I look like a goober. But
you look like a goober and you have two dishes on your
roof. Ah, Richard's funny.
Richard made it funny.
So it took him forever to get it all straightened out. I still have to do some monkeying because the new HD box is also driving the TV in the bedroom.
Yeah.
But it's really weird how they set that up, because it's like it gets it through a UHF channel. And the TV that's in there sucks right now, so it has trouble getting UHF, so blah, blah, blah. I will say that the...
your door keeps opening.
I will say that.
There you go.
Okay. The I had almost no problem once the new Dish HD box was hooked up, accessing the channels, going into setup and saying, I want it at 720p.
Yep.
I had no problem with that. Accessing the channels is fairly easy. We're looking at the CBS HD feed right now. It's beautiful.
Well, it looks really good considering it's a PVR feed. It's recorded.
This is recorded.
So usually that becomes the problem. It looks beautiful, but then when they record it, compromises are made. But this looks really good. I haven't seen much artifacting at all, and it looks really good.
Yeah. So this, it's nice. The overall software for the box, in terms of looking at the guide and setting up the recording, is light years better than the old box I had. That software was horrible.
Yep.
It was, I mean, it worked, but 10% of the time it was buggy as hell, and it was, so far, and I have yet to really get into the weeds of playing with the software, because I've only had it less than a day.
Incredible game. So you've only had this up and running for a day, so...
The HD feed went live about 6 o'clock last night was when he left.
Yeah.
And so I've been futzing around, and so I get the local HDs, I get the three big networks, but I don't get Fox, because Dish doesn't offer the Fox HD in this market, Seattle.
Do you get the KCTS HD streams?
No, I don't get PBS.
Or Kong?
HD. I get King, Como, and Cairo.
If you have local Comcast, you get like 10 locals. They're all worthless except for Fox, which is good.
I have a friend with an HD antenna who's willing to let me borrow it so I can see if I can put it in the attic and if it's worth going to the trouble of. Because the other problem is that locally, the Fox and the PBS transmitters are offline from the other transmitters. So you might not even be able to get them all with one antenna without moving it. Hopefully you won't hear my roof being sawn off, but if you do, c'est la vie. I don't have Fox HD. I can't watch
Seahawks
games.
Well, beyond that, are you happy?
So far, yes.
Have you played Xbox with it yet?
Yes, but not much. I've had such an insane week at work.
Yeah.
And the guy was here for 6 hours yesterday because Gears of War came out. I'm dying to play more Gears of War. I played 10 minutes of it yesterday morning.
Yep.
Before I woke my wife up with it and we had to go do stuff. I played it about 20 minutes before you came over.
Yep.
The Xbox looks awesome. Although, they have a 1080p output. I have a 1080p TV. I can't make use of that because my TV only accepts 1080p through the HDMI port. So, God dang it, Microsoft, make your Xbox 360 HDMI cable, and I am happy.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, the Dish guy left me an HDMI cable.
Nice.
I said when he got here, I don't have an extra component cable or an HDMI cable, so if we need one and test the signal, I'll have to go out and buy one. He says, I've got a component, I'll just leave with you, and he ends up leaving an HDMI cable, which is like $50.
Nice.
So I am very pleased about that.
Have you been following any of the Black Friday ads that have been coming out?
No, but I'm somewhat aware. I saw a blurb on Engadget or something that...
Jesus.
Like, apparently there's going to be mass HD TV deals the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Walmart? Is it Walmart? It's either Walmart or Best Buy. I think it's Walmart. Has a 42-inch, I think, plasma 42... HD, it has an HD receiver built into it, tuner built into it, $900. $900. You can only buy it from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Oh, like there's going to be any left at 11 a.m.
And then if they have any, the price goes up like $300, but $900.
Is it, do you know what brand it is? Is it a brand?
Whatever. It is a brand, but it's whatever. They're obviously been chugging them out in mass quantities, and the quality is going to be, pretty indifferent. It's basically the equivalent of the one that Gateway had been selling for $2,000. So they're basically, after a year, it's literally less than $1,000.
Is it a true HD signal? Because a lot of...
That's what they say it is.
Because a lot of the 42-inchers are a couple pixels short.
Oh, I don't know. That's it.
But, I mean, granted, I'm taking that from... And that's the end of that game. I don't know if it...
Perfect. but, I actually don't know. Other cool deals are... it's either them or Best Buy is offering 20-inch LCD monitors for $200. But the question there is how deep the pixel resolution is on them. TVs, LCD TVs.
I think I have. I do have the rest of the game.
LCD TVs for literally just. I can't remember what the price is, but in the hundred, like a hundred and some dollars.
Before I got distracted by the football, I was going to say that previous years, like 2 or 3 years ago, 42-inch quote unquote HD TV was actually
SD,
like 10 or 20 pixels short in both of the measurements from being full, full.
Yeah.
Now it was, you know, it was going to give you a good picture. You just weren't getting quite everything that was being sent signal wise. So I don't know if that is still the case with 42 inches.
I imagine here it's going to be whatever the most expensive. So it probably would be the compromise thing you're saying,
you know, and I'd be curious to know. I mean, clearly I don't need one now.
Yeah.
But you know, Mark actually was talking about that when he got here earlier this morning. He says, do I compromise my values for a $900 HD TV? You know, we're all of a sort who hate shopping at Walmart.
Absolutely.
/ just don't do it. I have actually purchased things at Walmart twice. Once because it was a trip to Hawaii, and that was literally the only place you could get stuff was Walmart.
Yep.
So that's fine. And the second was at my sister's wedding in Ohio when they lost our luggage. And that was the only shopping within a reasonable amount of distance. And I think we actually ended up returning it because the bag showed up late.
Personally, but I've probably purchased two things there twice. For my business, I've probably shopped there 20 times. And because it's cheaper and I run a nonprofit and I'm saving money and I hate that, but that's the way it works. And they're close to where we
were.
And
that's how most people say it. They're like, you know what? They've got the lowest prices and that is it.
Yeah. But personally, I don't shop there, even though I know they might have a lower price. I'll just go elsewhere. And it's not only because of my, you know, problems with Walmart. It's also, I just don't like being in there. I find the store, I don't like 68-year-old people wearing a vest greeting me at the door. I find that sad. I find a lot of it I don't like. But for work, I need to because every dollar I save is dollars I can do to help cats elsewhere.
Yeah,
so
I completely understand.
But on a personal level, I have purchased a couple things there, including a video game. I bought a video game there once, and other than that, not much else.
But it's an interesting question. If you hate shopping at Walmart, but
yep,
if you go there the Friday after Thanksgiving in the morning and you can get an HD TV for
$900,
it really makes you think.
I noticed they had mountain bikes. Now, having built mountain bikes and store mountain bikes, I can imagine how bad they are. But men's and women's 26-inch mountain bikes for like $35. It's like they're getting to a point
$37.
$37? Yep. So it's getting to the point where it's literally that $37, 30 of that had to have been the cost of shipping it over here. So they're building bikes for $4 or $5 at a pop. I mean, it's just incredible how things have, you know, the efficiencies of global economy. I was looking at this article the other day, and they're talking about what they call Panamax ships, meaning bigger than them.
Was it the Wired thing?
Yeah, the Wired thing. And they were showing the picture of this new Panamax ship, the container ship that can hold. Now, a Panama container ship can hold about, I think it's like 1,400 containers. This big ship that's just being built can hold 12,000 containers. It's incredible. I mean, I'm not sure what port that thing will pull into. I mean, it's so big, but 12,000 containers.
Well, you know, generally that's as long as it gets the super ports like Long Beach.
Yeah, get to Long Beach. It's going to go straight from Shanghai to Long Beach, and wow, incredible.
God, I thought. Oh, I was going to do a little Gears of War spiel here.
Tell me about Gears of War.
So this is,
I'm thinking about getting it. Co-op we can play over live? You know,
I believe
Xbox
so.
Live?
So this is this has been the it game for a while. Everyone's looking forward to it. The hype machine within the video game community is on set to 10.
Yeah.
See how I avoided making the Spinal Tap 11 joke there?
Which, by the way, several people did. Oh, no, it's the Call of Duty they were making the Spinal Tap reference.
I am so sick of people saying, it goes to 11.
Yeah.
You know what?
I was sick of it in 1984, a year after Spinal Tap came out.
Anyway, so the hype machine was in gear. Everyone, you know, this is the game. Emergence Day, which is today, by the way, November 12th, is that the date? Yeah. Is Emergence Day. It shipped Tuesday. But with video games, shipping dates and when they actually show up in the stores, two different things.
Yeah.
Which I learned was
I went out looking for Call of Duty 3 and it wasn't even in the store yet. I should have gone to Costco because Costco always has them pretty quickly.
Well, apparently FedEx screwed up and left two pallets of these things sitting on the dock in Memphis, which is their main hub. And so like all the GameStops and electronic boutiques got screwed. Hmm. So everybody who pre-ordered a game that it was reserved, a lot of who did it through those two branches just got hosed. I never pre-order video games because I'm sorry, that's ridiculous. So came out supposedly Tuesday. I had my friends bouncing around over the week trying to, you know, where is it? Should I get it? My friend who works at Microsoft was supposedly, he was checking the MS store because it's published through Microsoft.
Yep.
And 360 games are $25 there versus MSRP of 60.
Yep.
So I've got him checking the store, and it was like, well, if it's not out by Friday, I'm just going to get it. Friday, workday ends. I get out of work at like 7 o'clock. I start calling around. I call the local Best Buy, and you got to navigate through their phone tree. So a minute and a half later, you finally get the guy. Oh, unless you pre-ordered it, we don't have any for you. Like, fine, F you. I call the Circuit City right next door to the Best Buy. You navigate through the phone tree. You press the button for video games. It rings. Finally, it says, the Verizon representative is unable to take your call. If you leave a message, they'll get back to you. Beep. Message block is full. And then it bounces you out to the menu. And I'm like, well, I guess I pressed the wrong button. I press video games again. I get the same Verizon message. I'm Jesus. Like, clearly you don't want my money, so screw you.
Here's what I don't get. Xbox or PlayStation 2 or Wii, there's a legitimate reason why you're going to have a shortage. There's a definite, legitimate reason. Because it costs a lot to make a console. With a disc... Now you don't want to overdo it, so you're throwing away cartridges. But ultimately, the packaging and creation of this $60 game, $1.50 of that is at the absolute max, is in that disc. There is no reason why, once that thing goes gold, and that thing went gold a month and a half ago, there's no reason why they can't ship a zillion of those out there, unless they're trying to create this sense of it.
They tried to ship, but if FedEx screws you, FedEx screws you. That's all there is to it.
Now, that was the only reason why everybody was there.
Why it was late.
Okay.
Now, that's what I've heard from the internet.
Because somehow they managed to get, you know, the latest Harry Potter book out to all of the stores and everything on the same day. And that's a way bigger deal than Gears of War.
I agree. But I'm calling around. Fred Meyer, which is sort of a local everything store, kind of like a Walmart Supercenter, is Fred Meyer, only without being evil.
Owned by Kroger.
You call up Fred Meyer. Within two rings, a live person picks up the phone. You know, Fred Meyer, how can I help you? I'd like to talk to the electronics department, please. Boom. Electronics department. First ring, somebody picks up. Gears of War in stock? Yes or no? Entire duration of the call, 25 seconds. They knew what I wanted. Yeah, nope, sold out. Bye, thanks. That was it. And I was just so impressed I got a competent person, knew what I wanted. I boom, boom, boom like that. Finally found a copy at the Fred Meyer on 196th.
Cool.
But I call up and a girl answers. And I'm like, mentally, I'm like, oh.
Because I don't like girls either.
Because I'm stereotyping in my head. And I say, do you have any copies of Gears of War?
A lot of people claim that more than 50% of gamers are women. That's what they claim.
So I say, do you have any copies of Gears of War? And she's like, what's that? And I'm like, how
could you not know this most important game of the year?
Exactly. She's like, I'll go check. And I'm mentally going, it doesn't matter if you check or not, because you don't know what you're talking about. So she goes and checks. She's like, yeah, we've got that. And I'm like, well, do you have a goodly amount of copies? Yeah. And I'm like, okay, thanks. And I hang up and I'm like, I can't trust her.
You live
opinion.
Very close, fortunately.
Well, so I called around, and the GameStop next to the mall had one left, and the GameStop in the mall had a few, and those are all close to each other. So I thought, if Fred Meyer chick ends up not knowing what she was talking about, I go to GameStop. To her credit, I went to that Fred Meyer. They had it, multiple copies in stock. I was a jerk for not believing her.
Wow.
But to me, that's like calling up a Chevy dealership. Do you have any Corvettes? No, what's that? And you're like, how do you not know?
Well, when I got Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, it was a similar thing. I got it on the same day, and the GameStop that I went to, the only reason they had a copy.
I hate going to actual video game stores.
Oh,
GameStop,
I hate them too.
EBs. I
hate
it.
But they had it, and the only reason, in fact, I went to like one of the other one, or their competitor was, they didn't have it. Went to GameStop, and they had it, and the only reason they had it was because somebody like had put one behind the counter for their friend so they could buy it later, and then they saw that and go, no, we're not supposed to do that, so they sold it to me.
And apparently that's part of the reason why these are not shipped in advance and then just put out on the shelves on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's to keep all these jackasses who work at these places from selling it to themselves and their friends early.
You heard what the reports were in Japan last week when they put the PS3 on a PlayStation.
No, I've heard nothing about what.
Okay, so they put it on sale, and the Japanese camera crews are going to interview all the people walking out with their new PlayStations, and they start to realize, God, they're all like Chinese, and they all look kind of homeless. And apparently, a bunch of businessmen had basically just hired home. Like in Japan, it's a very homogenistic society, and Koreans and Chinese that live there are basically the dregs of that society. And they basically hired a bunch of them to get in line to make sure they buy them so they could go buy them and then resell them for massively more money instantly. So there's all these people walking out with their PlayStation. They're going to interview. What do you think? And they're like, I'm looking forward to it. They didn't purchase a single game or anything else. Wow. San Diego won. Oh my God. What an incredible game. I mean, they were down like 28 to
nothing.
Yeah,
you would not. First part of this game, as we completely switch from PlayStation to football, first part of this game, going into the game, you would have picked San Diego.
Yep.
First part of the game, you're like, San Diego's dead. Cincinnati's dicing, you know, just completely slicing and
dicing. At halftime, it was 28-7, and San Diego.
And then San Diego came back. I couldn't even tell you how I did it.
That's 42 points in the second half. That's incredible.
Yeah, 49-41 end score. That's an incredibly high-scoring game.
Yeah.
You almost never see games get
we missed it, but I'd like to see, was the defense just falling apart, or was it just incredible offense combination? But anyway, so it was funny to see how the PlayStation, and tons of Wii coverage, too, lately, too. I'm getting excited about that. It's kind of funny you forget locally, because locally, both Nintendo and Microsoft are headquartered here, although Nintendo's obviously a Japanese company.
Well, it's Nintendo's North American headquarters.
Yeah, they're North American headquarters. So you're finally getting a little bit of coverage in the local press in Nintendo. You'd think it would be more. It's just kind of Microsoft tends to swamp all that coverage. So it's interesting. I've actually contemplated. I've looked at some of the Wii games. And the problem with me is I'm like a first-person shooter kind of thing. And I know they're putting stuff like Call of Duty on there. But the Wii, really, I think their core audience and the games they'll do well, they're actually not my kind of games. I'm not a super person.
If I had more time and more disposable income, I'd be fine. I mean, I'd be fine with getting a PS3, too.
Yeah.
But I don't. The amount of time I have to play video games is limited.
So I'm just totally not a multiplayer gamer. Not at all.
I've never had multiple consoles. It's always been one.
Well, no,
or
even
the other.
Even with like the live, like the new test drive. What was the game I was playing? Like even Halo. I'm playing like Halo, and I just like don't really like it. I know that's the reason everybody loves it, but like I'm not that, or I might not be that good, or I might be way better. I just don't like playing. I just like playing the first person game that they come up with. They have this new Splinter Cell, which I'm playing, and I'm really enjoying the first person thing. And apparently the multiplayer game is incredible. They set up. I have so zero interest. If it was Friends or whatever.
You're talking about live versus just the single player campaign.
Yes, I only like the single player campaigns. I am not into the live at all. Although if it was with friends and I knew I was just playing with friends, I might be more into it.
Well, it's interesting because I've been playing Halo and Halo 2 since almost the beginning. Loved them because it was the first-person shooter that A, I had time for, and B, I was somewhat good at.
Yep.
That's right. The Simpsons trailer is tonight.
Oh, that's right.
For the
right movie.
That'll be interesting. And so I played online Halo 2 a lot, both with friends and with complete strangers.
Yep.
And you definitely saw a shift towards playing with strangers sucking more.
Yeah.
Because people were cheating. People were leveling themselves down. People were being complete jackasses. And plus, having 12-year-olds A, beat you, and B, scream at you and mock you.
See, I don't even listen. I don't even put on the headphone thing because I don't know these people. I'm not really comfortable even in a same thing.
If you're doing a team game and there's squad tactics,
yeah,
like you need to go here and I'll go here,
yep,
you need to be paying attention.
I agree.
If you're doing a free-for-all, then it doesn't matter. But it's just got to – and I don't mind if friends kick my butt, which happens regularly – that I don't want to have my butt kicked by a 12-year-old. So I joined this clan, a Halo clan, too old to play.
Yeah.
Which is made up, like, you have to be at least 25 years old. I'm like, fine. If I get beat by that, great, because it's not some jackass kid. So, and then, of course, right after I joined, I think I played 3 games, and then I got too busy and haven't played a clan match since.
Well, you know, the new Test Drive Unlimited, it takes place on the entire island of Oahu.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a legitimately great game. It's not, a lot of the graphics aren't as good as they could be, but it's stunning how they've literally mapped this entire thing. But what's most incredible is you have to go from place to place to get to another, you know, to do some of the single player, you know, I'm going to do this race, I'm going to do that race. But while you're driving around, you're constantly passing, literally at any given time, hundreds of other cars. They've set it up with no lag, and there's somebody there, and you just flash your lights, and you can challenge them and race them. You're literally living on this island with all these other players at the same time, and you can at any time challenge them and do some other stuff. And it's kind of fun, but even then, I'm playing, and you'll start to realize some people have... They're somehow figuring out how to cheat on this. And King Gang came out right away. Like, you'll play some, you see, you look at their scores, and you go, that's not even remotely possible how they did it. And that just disturbs me. I wish I could figure out a way that there's no cheating.
You know, the guys at Bungie and Microsoft Live, you know, really tried hard to set up the equivalent so your matchmaking is with people of your same skill level, which I think works pretty well.
Until somebody decides, I want to beat some people, so they level down.
Yeah, and then
I
hate
that. I'm playing Halo, and I'm like, I could not be worse at this thing. So I'm playing it, but there's like a couple people that literally, within the course of 2 minutes, they've gotten 25 kills, and we're all like at 3, and it's like, you know, you cannot be at our level if you're getting 25 kills and we're getting 3.
And one thing I learned is, because I've got a friend who recently picked up Halo 2, much like yourself.
Yeah.
And we've played each other online a couple times, and since he's not as good at it. But I can nerf myself. I can basically make myself weaker through the options menu so that he has a fighting chance of beating me.
Yeah.
And that's actually worked pretty well, where we find out what level he can start killing me at, and then it's a fair game.
Yeah.
But of course, strangers don't do that. It's like friends have to do that for that to count.
Yeah. Well, we've now officially become our longest podcast ever.
Well, there's a lot to edit out. I think that about, although Zune comes out this week, this next week. And it is funny. The two opposing viewpoints on the social aspect of it. It's the most worthless thing ever. No one's going to care about sharing songs. / It's the best thing ever, and everyone's going to love doing it.
Somehow I think it's going to be a little bit more of the former than the latter. That's me. I think is interesting is the two biggies, the two absolute most important journalists when it comes to personal technology, Walter Mossberg and David Pogue, both gave it middling to bad reviews. And Pogue in particular, I felt it, to some extent... I think Pogue is a brilliant journalist or anything, but Pogue is an Apple guy through and through. Now, he will call a spade when it comes to Apple, but to some extent, you got to feel a little bad for Microsoft because Pogue is so clearly aligned with Apple stuff. His opinions and Mossberg's opinions seemed like, boy, I bet you I would share these exactly.
And I would say, and I'm a total Apple person through and through, but in the past couple of years, I have really stopped being a Microsoft hater.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons.
Same here, exactly.
And it's just been, you know what? I think at this point, they're not trying to be evil.
Yep.
I think there was a point when they were. Yep. They're not anymore.
And they're just trying to put out good software and make some money.
It's a big company with different divisions.
Yep.
Xbox division, especially with the 360, hit a home run and did it right.
Yep.
The Zune, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. At this point, I have no interest in it. It's got no built-in podcast support. And as Richard gesticulates,
I hate that thing.
So do I. It's the most, it's the NFL. It's the Fox NFL graphic of the robot dancing up and down.
Yeah. It's like a super football player. But he's doing this dancing and I hate that thing.
Have you noticed that that's the same moves the Mariner Moose does? And I'm sure every mascot does.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of that, that John Mellencamp Chevy campaign. I want to kill myself.
It's so depressing because, you know, and you know, Mellencamp pointedly, he's never sold his stuff before. He never had. And I think in this particular case, he, first of all, it's not a good song. Mellencamp, who I love, has not had a really good song in about 15 years. And this was an attempt to be some anthemic thing. And I think they approached him and said, listen, we're not going to have you sell Chevy ads. Let's do a video that talks about America, talks about other stuff, and Chevy's role in this. I'm sure he bought into that. Well, in fact, what it is no, you're using images of Katrina, this other stuff, to sell Chevy. That's the simple fact, and, well, it's just depressing.
Is jingoistic the right word?
Yeah.
Well, it's just this, you know, flag waving, you better love it. You're with us or against us.
I don't take it that way at all. I don't think Mellencamp took it that way. Mellencamp. he probably thought like what they said. We're not going to show any pro America, pro this, that. We're going to talk about the struggles of America. We're going to show, you know, images from Katrina, things that are not the best part, this and that. Well, I'm sure that's what they sold them at. But honest to God, in 30 seconds, it does not convey that. It just is random.
To me, it's like those retarded Toby Keith Ford ads.
Yeah.
This is my truck, and this is my car. Da, 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 da. And, you know, we're doing manly things in manly ways and chewing tobacco and, you know, real men wear cowboy hats and wear boots.
Well, the irony that you're perceiving it that way probably would kill Mellencamp because he's as liberal as they come, obviously, never sold his songs. Had that big album a couple of years ago that was basically an entire rant against Bush.
I totally respect John Mellencamp, but I hate this campaign.
I agree.
With the passion.
And it depresses me that he got involved with it because I imagine he thought it would be perceived differently.
And it's funny because if you think about it, and I know we're going long here, but I don't care. If you think about it, because, you know, I watch a lot of football, so I see a lot of car ads.
Yep.
And it's got to be kind of hard to run the marketing for a company like GM or Ford. Because you're always doing some campaign or another. Yep. You've been doing advertising, TV ads, nonstop for as long as you can remember.
Yep.
You're not going to come up with anything new.
Nope.
What the most innovative car ad, I think, in the past couple of years was that European Honda Accord one when it was the Rube Goldberg thing.
Oh, yeah.
And that's it.
Where it assembled itself or
I kind of like. I like the Volkswagen GTI ads.
The ones with the name?
The pimp, unpimp your ride, and the can, you know, and the making fun of the playing up the boy racer aspect. You know, could you be quiet, honey? I can't hear the engine with all your yakking. that was a brief campaign. They're not on anymore. But so I have sympathy for the fact it's got to be really hard to come up with compelling new car campaigns. At the same time, everything they come up with, I hate.
Yeah. I looked at those ads like it's not doing well. I think it was intended to evoke certain things and in a more middle America, slightly liberal sense, even though you're interpreting the other way, it doesn't do either. It just is terrible on every level. And it's evoking anger, which is not what you generally want.
Well, I'm not going to buy a Chevy anyway, so they're not losing a sale with me, but
yeah. Anyway,
I guess we should wrap up.
Yeah, we should.
Boy, you know what? Can you vamp for a minute?
I can. Well, what are you going to look up?
I'm going to check our email.
Okay. Let's see if we have actual email so we can correspond to it.
Emails and we haven't responded to them, and right now there's no excuse because I've got my laptop.
You know, I think I told you, but I went out to play buy Call of Duty. I didn't get it, so I got Splinter Cell again. And it's funny, I've been telling you, I don't watch TV. I don't do much lately. Since I got that frickin' Xbox, I have been living in front of that TV. I have
told
probably
my wife yesterday. Oh, we've got HD now. I don't need to leave the house ever again.
Well, that's kind of, although HD, mine isn't quite, you know, it's not true HD, but to me, I don't know. I've just been watching more TV lately, but that Xbox has changed everything, man. And by the way, I love the Xbox as a controller for DVDs. I find it massively better than all the other DVD players I've had. I love that setup. So what, any mail?
We have no mail to the email address.
Well, why don't you restate the mail address anyway? Just
if you would like to, I'm going to go ahead and pause that. If you would like to send us a question, send us something that you would like us to discuss, you guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. And in theory, I will get it before that week's show.
Before the final minutes of that week's
and
show.
And bring it up. And we will discuss your question, comment, or concern.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for listening to this rather odd broadcast, as I've had construction interruptions, and we've gone very long talking about things that don't have anything to do with movies.
Yep.
So thanks again for listening. I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
And this is our country.
It sure is.
America.
Oh.
Fuck yeah.